how New York is coping with the impact of COVID-19.
New York City is a bustling metropolis of pedestrians and cars and bicyclists and people just getting around and being out on the streets with each other all the time. It's loud. People are yelling from their windows at all hours of night. You know, there's always someone on the street. There's car alarms going off. You're always saying, I can never get a good night's sleep here. Now I only hear sirens.
In New York, the sound of sirens has replaced all the ordinary noises of city life.
New York's Empire State Building flashes in red and white like a siren, a sky-high tribute to the ambulance workers tearing through the streets below.
The car alarm isn't going off in the middle of the night, and I never thought that I'd miss the sound of a car alarm. There's no people on the street. There's none of the sort of normal city chatter. That's gone now.
This densely populated city welcomes millions of visitors every month, which in part explains why it's been so hard hit. And with over 2,000 deaths in the region and a staggering 84,000 cases across the state, New York has now overtaken Wuhan in terms of the sheer number of COVID-19 patients. Healthcare facilities and staff are struggling to cope.
Every inch of Brookdale Hospital Medical Center in Brooklyn now inundated.
This is a war zone. It's a medical war zone. Every day I come in, what I see on a daily basis is pain, despair, suffering, and healthcare disparities. We're fighting for your lives, and we're fighting for our own lives. We're trying to keep our head above water and not drown.
We have been behind from day one. This virus has been ahead of us from day one. You don't win a war that way. The next battle is the apex, and that's where the enemy either overwhelms our healthcare system or we are able to handle the onslaught of the enemy. And that's what we're planning for every day.
From The Guardian, I'm Maithili Rao. Today in Focus, the devastating impact of COVID-19 in New York. Jessica Glenza, you're The Guardian U.S. health reporter, and you've been covering the seismic impact that COVID-19 is having in New York. When you talk to healthcare workers at some of the city's frontline hospitals, what are they telling you?
As far as what healthcare workers are saying on the ground, there's a need for more ventilators. There is a need for more personal protective equipment. They are in an incredibly stretched and stressful position. The defining position is the sense of extreme anxiety that healthcare workers are dealing with on a daily basis. This idea that you've been walking around a hospital all day, you're not sure about your equipment, you're worried that you're going to track this virus back home to your family. What if it's on your shoes? What if it's on my mask? What if my mask isn't good enough? You know, you have ER doctors who are stripping naked in the hallway of their New York City apartment buildings so that they can immediately put all of those clothes into the washing machine. They're afraid of contaminating their homes. And then the primary fear is that we're going to run out of ventilators in New York City and that they are going to be in a position to have to decide which patients die.
I know some of your reporting with healthcare workers has focused on Elmhurst Hospital in Queens, which is right near where I used to live in New York. And the photos I've seen of the hospital, that area looks almost unrecognizable.
Pat, Elmhurst Hospital is certainly at the center of this coronavirus crisis right now, and the staff is working to keep pace. But the number of confirmed cases continues to grow, and the line outside the hospital waiting for people to get tests to confirm if they have it is also growing. I'm going to step outside.
And it's even gotten the attention of President Trump, who's a Queens native.
So I grew up in Queens, New York, right next to a place called Elmhurst, Queens. And they have a hospital that's a very good hospital, Elmhurst Hospital, right? I've known it. I know it very well, right? And I've been watching that for the last week on television. body bags all over in hallways. I've been watching them bring in trailer trucks, freezer trucks. They're freezer trucks because they can't handle the bodies. There's so many of them. This is essentially in my community, in Queens, New York.
How has the situation become so critical there?
Well, I think there's a number of factors in Queens that have played into this. And like, it's arguably one of the most ethnically diverse places on the planet. There's a huge amount of immigrants that live in this neighborhood, 20,000 newly settled immigrants. And it's also a place with a huge amount of undocumented immigrants, people who don't have access to the healthcare system of the United States, and people who don't have a safety net if they don't work. So a lot of those long lines that you're seeing, according to ER doctors and the city councilman Francisco Moya, who represents that district, are people who are hoping to get a test and to test positive so that they can show their employer they need to quarantine because they are, for example, a contract worker, a construction worker, a person who can't get a day off or 14 days off to quarantine, even though they might feel sick and concerned that they're spreading the disease. And so you have this sort of coalescence of factors in Queens, and this is all sort of combining around this one hospital, Elmhurst, to make it very stretched really to maximum capacity. You know, I think if you want a firsthand view of what life is like for emergency room doctors in Queens, then you need look no further than Dr. Colleen Smith, who recorded a video and provided it to the New York Times showing just how stretched the hospital is.
On a regular day, my emergency department's volume is pretty high. It's about 200 people a day. Now we're seeing 400 or more people a day. We were trying to isolate patients with cough and fever and be more careful around them, but we weren't necessarily being extra careful around all the other patients. And then we started to realize that patients who were coming in with no fever but abdominal pain actually had findings on their x-rays and chest CTs that were consistent with this coronavirus COVID-19.
And what she says was really echoed by people you spoke to as well, right?
Yeah, I think it is an absolutely otherworldly situation for people on the front lines, something they never anticipated they would see in their entire medical careers.
How is it?
Hell. Biblical. I kid you not. People come in, they get intubated, they die, the cycle repeats.
Overwhelmed?
Yeah, the system's overwhelmed all over the place.
People who have decades of experience in medicine are saying it's like nothing they've ever seen before. It's completely unprecedented.
And it brings a lot of personal risk to people covering this, too. I understand Dr. Smith has since tested positive for COVID-19.
There's a huge amount of personal risk for healthcare workers and a huge amount of anxiety and fear. They see firsthand just how aggressive this disease is. In New York City, one of the problems that has plagued the system is the lack of personal protective equipment. And every single phone call that I have with a medical resident, a doctor, a nurse, anybody, personal protective equipment comes up.
If patients cough, it's all in your hair, where I'm not feet away from them. I am 2 inches from their face. So I have COVID in my hair, I have COVID on my face.
We're dealing with an overwhelming need for PPE in a way that's unprecedented, right? So if we looked at like Italy and China, what they tell us to do, which is to gown up for every patient, make sure there are no breaches, even use a buddy to make sure that you're well protected. It's just not our capacity right now anywhere in America.
It is a constant source of anxiety that they will run out. Masks that at one time were single use, you would go in, for example, you would intubate, that's put a tube down someone's throat, you would put that person on a ventilator, you would intubate a patient. Under normal circumstances, you would wear an N95 respirator mask, that's the mask they're recommended to wear, and you would dispose of it after that patient. Now they're being asked to wear the mask for an entire day, for days at a time, until it's soiled or wet. People in this field understand the science about why they were told to use it as a single-use item before, and now to know that they have to stretch that equipment for their entire shift, I think, is risky and deeply frightening. It's actually emotional just to talk to frontline workers because of how much stress they're under at this point. And we're not at the peak of this crisis yet. We're still climbing the mountain, in Governor Cuomo's words.
You see that curve? You see a curve? I see a mountain. The next battle will happen at the top of that mountain. That's where it is going to be.
A huge point of contention here in the UK is the fact that they're only testing around 500 medical workers a day across the country. And that's despite the fact that one in four are off sick with possible coronavirus symptoms. What is the testing situation in New York when it comes to frontline medical staff and everyone else, too?
I think it is full stop incredibly difficult for people to get tested. I think it, well, first of all, if you have mild symptoms and those symptoms can be managed at home, they are going to avoid testing you because there's a limited number of nasal swabs. And so with limited testing supplies, anybody who's mildly symptomatic or asymptomatic is not getting tested. Those tests are reserved for frontline healthcare workers who are sick. But I've heard reports, anecdotally, of course, that even among frontline health workers, it's difficult for them to get tested.
To that point, New York is somewhere that we think of as having a lot of resources. It's a relatively wealthy city. It's got a number of hospitals, several of them world-class. When you look out at how this virus is going to affect other parts of the country that don't necessarily have the same kind of resources, are you very worried?
Well, I mean, look, New York City isn't just a place we think of as having a good medical infrastructure. It has more doctors per capita than any other state except for two. That's Massachusetts and Maryland. And that's where we have the National Institutes of Health and Harvard. So it has more doctors, just doctors, full stop, than 47 states in the nation. I think when you think about what this looks like as it spreads across the United States, it's extremely frightening. And it makes you think if we're impacted in this kind of way in New York City, where we have some of the best resources in the country, what kind of impacts is this going to have in rural America, where hospitals are shutting down, or in cities and states that the for-profit American healthcare industry has largely fled from? I think it's incredibly concerning. One of the only perhaps hopeful things is that the rest of the United States is not nearly as dense as New York, but you sort of feel like you're looking into the future for the rest of the United States when you look at New York and you look at hospitals like Elmhurst, which are absolutely stretching their resources to the maximum level. You know, what is that going to look like in Detroit? What is that going to look like in New Orleans? What is it going to look like in Cincinnati, Oklahoma, Wyoming, Alaska? I think it's incredibly concerning.
For weeks, President Trump has been heavily criticized for downplaying the severity of the crisis. Meanwhile, in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo seems to have really tackled the situation head on, and he's emerged as something of a hero of the moment. How has he been handling the pandemic?
Well, I think you have really a contrast of leadership. You have President Trump, who's often trying to reassure people by saying, everything's okay, don't worry about this.
There's tremendous hope as we look forward and we begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
When the economy opens back up, it's going to be like a burst of light. And I think that is just not in line with the experience many people have right now. And the contrast is Governor Andrew Cuomo, who's saying, this is exactly how bad it is. This is exactly how many ventilators we need. This is exactly how many physicians, nurses, EMTs, ambulances we are short.
FEMA says we're sending 400 ventilators. Really? What am I going to do with 400 ventilators when I need 30,000? You pick the 26,000 people who are going to die because you only sent 400 ventilators.
And I think that the difference there is the sense that, well, it is incredibly severe and serious, but at least there's someone who's got their arms around it. At least there's someone who has wrapped their head around how bad it is, as opposed to someone who's sort of always telling you that it's okay when things very much do not feel okay in New York.
Hearing Governor Cuomo step up to the moment has had such an impact on people that they're even starting to say that he should run for president. It's something his brother, Chris Cuomo, asked him about on CNN recently.
Let me ask you something. With all of this adulation that you're getting for doing your job, are you thinking about running for president? Tell the audience.
No. No.
No, you won't answer?
No, I answered. The answer is no.
No, you're not thinking about it? Sometimes it's
one word. From your perspective, does Governor Cuomo deserve praise for stepping up in this crisis?
I mean, I certainly think that anything that can bring people hope in this crisis, and if that's the leadership of Governor Cuomo, deserves to be praised. People are really in need of sure-footedness in the face of everything that we're going through. But Cuomo has a mixed record. Right now, something that is not making national headlines is the budget fight in New York State. And this proposal by Governor Cuomo to slash Medicaid, which is a public health insurance program for the poor and disabled here in the United States. It's a national program. It's paid for jointly by states and the federal government. His proposal is to slash Medicaid by $2.5 billion.
Governor Cuomo proposed his $178 billion New York State budget on Tuesday, and one of the ways he plans to reduce the more than $6 billion deficit is cut spending to Medicaid. 6 million New Yorkers, one in three, are on Medicaid.
So you have this situation where he has become a voice of reason in the pandemic. At the same time, his proposals remain incredibly divisive.
This pandemic is coming at a time in New York where hospital budgets are particularly strained. Can you explain what hospital budgets have to do with the Medicare system?
Hospital budgets and Medicare and Medicaid are intimately connected. They're almost like two sides of the same coin. If you start to cut back on Medicaid, you're cutting back directly on the amount of money that doctors get paid, the amount of money that hospitals get paid, the amount of money that labs get paid. You're not only harming patients who might rely on Medicaid, but you're also harming the providers that rely on Medicaid and the medical system that relies on Medicaid. And it's an especially troubling time to hear about Medicaid cuts because this is a social safety net that people use, for example, when they're unemployed. To go and cut the medical safety net at this time, it could really actually have a devastating impact on patients and potentially on hospitals as well.
We'll be back after this. You mentioned unemployment. In the last 2 weeks, a total of nearly 10 million people filed for unemployment across the U.S., a record high. Many of them are going to be finding themselves suddenly without health insurance, which previously had come through their employer. Are you starting to see this play out in New York?
Well, I can't tell you exactly how many people are going to lose their health insurance. In general, in the United States, 50% of people get health insurance through an employer. I can make some predictions about what we'll see. We'll see a lot more people delaying going to the doctor until they're very ill. And you're going to see a lot of people who are getting stuck with extraordinarily high bills for their care, thousands of dollars in expenses that they can ill afford when they're unemployed. You know, this is a sort of delayed after effect of this pandemic. It's something like an earthquake happened and now we're waiting for the tsunami. You know, what are the economic consequences of this pandemic, including doctors' bills, going to be in the United States? It's certainly something that you can see on the horizon.
Jessica, you've done a lot of healthcare reporting. You're no stranger to talking to people about life and death situations, but what has reporting on this story been like for you? You mentioned the word tsunami. It seems like another magnitude of crisis here.
You know, I think that the most important stories for us to tell right now are the stories that are at ground level on the front lines. It's with nurses and doctors, EMTs, paramedics, you know, and then to expand that a little bit further, food delivery workers, cashiers.
And you've been working from home just like the rest of us, in your case in Jersey City, just across the water from Manhattan. Is it frustrating not to be able to do that reporting face to face?
Oh, incredibly, incredibly frustrating. Incredibly frustrating. I want to be there. I want to be with the people who are breaking down in tears at the level of anxiety that they have going to work every day, and at the same time feel an obligation to go to work. I'm almost having trouble putting into words how extraordinary and unprecedented, unbelievable the situation is. Even though I speak with people on the front lines every single day, I find myself reminding myself that this is real, that this is, it's an extraordinary, extraordinary series of events that are happening here in New York City.
At what stage of following global news on coronavirus did it hit home that this was going to profoundly change life in New York?
There's been so many moments in the last couple weeks. I think perhaps for me personally, it was going to the grocery store. You know, this was a couple days after the lockdown. Look, we all have to get food at some point. And it was a feeling of being nervous around other people and concerned that with so much community spread, an act as simple as going to the grocery store could imperil your well-being in a serious way and the well-being of people that you love. So that really drove it home for me because I realized suddenly that the whole psychology of the city would change after this. You know, whether we'd like to admit it or not, you have to wonder whether people will be willing to pack into the tiny little restaurants that we love, whether those tiny restaurants will be there, whether people will want to practically climb over one another to get into a movie theater, will they want to go to Yankee Stadium? It's hard to see what it looks like when we come out the other side of this, and I think it's going to profoundly change the way people interact with each other.
Jessica, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
That's it for today. As always, thank you for listening. If you'd like to support The Guardian in its commitment to publishing accurate, reliable news in times of global crisis, just visit theguardian.com/support. You can follow all of Jessica Glenza's reporting on COVID-19 in New York, along with the work of her Guardian U.S. colleagues across the country, at theguardian.com. Today's episode was produced by me, Mythili Rao. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back on Monday.